Welcome to Startup Health Now, the weekly web show that celebrates the healthcare transformers and change makers reimagining healthcare. My name is Unity Stokes, and today we have a very special episode. We're going to be talking to Joseph Flesch, the co-founder and president of Purple Binder. This is an episode that's actually supported by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who's helping Startup Health on a mission to educate more entrepreneurs on how to innovate in underserved communities. So stick around. It's going to be a great conversation.
It is the duty of leaders to lead, of the creative to create, of the daring to do. The free world expects leadership of us. Its fate and our fate depends upon our leadership. We are industrious, inventive, restless, with the fires that burn within us. Well, I say that nothing is easy, and the best things are the hardest. And all our troubles, all our immense difficulties, now and in the future, can I say, be solved if we have the will, the courage. Future is to those who take it.
Welcome to Startup Health Now. We've got a very exciting conversation planned today with Joseph Flesch today from Purple Binder. Welcome.
Thanks.
So Great to kick things off, love to learn a little bit about you, and then we'll go into the mission of Purple Binder. But tell me about yourself. Where do you come from, and what's your background?
Sure. Well, Purple Binder is based in Chicago, where I ended up because I went to school for computer science. So I'm kind of a geek by training.
We love geeks. Geeks are good.
Good. Yeah. I feel warm and welcomed. So I came to Purple Binder because it just astonished me that we have all this incredible technology that's being put into the hands of consumers and enterprises every day. And I saw so many of my classmates from school go on to jobs in Silicon Valley where they were working really, really hard, applying just the best and brightest that they had to building new ways to buy shoes and to book dinner reservations. Those things are all well and good. I like shoes and pictures of kittens online as much as the next person. But I really felt that there was room to apply all of this new tech to a space where it really, to a space that just hadn't been addressed by technology before, the social services domain. You can find a place to go out to dinner online, but you can't find all of the social services that are in a particular community. And then when the Affordable Care Act passed, it kind of dawned on me, there was just this moment where I realized that access to social services was going to be very key as the healthcare system transitioned into value-based care. That in order to keep people healthier in the communities where they live and work and play, there was going to need to be a way to access social services through a technology platform.
So how do you describe the mission then of Purple Binder?
The mission of Purple Binder? Well, to give you an example, you know, one story that we heard recently from a social worker that was using Purple Binder was a mom who came in for a clinical visit with her infant child, and the social worker was talking to the mom and realized that she couldn't afford to buy enough diapers for her infant, and that was why that the kid had, she talked to the doctor and they realized that's why the kid had been getting an infection. Mm. And so the social worker used Purple Binder and found a church that was just a few blocks down from the clinic that was handing out all kinds of infant supplies in its basement. And it was right there, right down the street from the clinic, but she wouldn't have found it if it weren't for Purple Binder. And that made a real and concrete difference in that baby's health.
That's fantastic. I love those tangible stories. So when you're out in the industry, how do you describe Purple Binder? What is Purple Binder?
What is Purple Binder? It's a platform for matching people with the social services that they need to improve their barriers to health. So it comes in a couple of different flavors. One flavor is for nurses, physicians, and other clinical staff. And the other flavor is for public access from any internet-connected device, right? So they're kind of different audiences, clinical staff on one hand and consumers on the other. And what it does is it lets clinical staff screen a patient for what social needs they have, refer them to services that can address those needs, and then track the outcomes of those referrals. So that healthcare providers also end up with this larger picture of what are the social needs in their population.
So is this a free service that a consumer has access to, or does a doctor go to a website? Talk to me in practical terms about how someone uses this platform.
Great question. So it's a web-based software as a service platform, so you're always accessing it through a web browser. It's when it's available to consumers, it is free for them to use. It'll be supplied to them by their local government or by a healthcare provider.
Okay.
And those are our main customers.
So where are you today? Where can one get access to Purple Binder today? Is it across the nation? Is it in only these underserved markets? Give us maybe an update on where things stand today.
Absolutely. So we started in Chicago, and we have installations all over Illinois and California. We work with city governments, at-risk provider groups, and managed care organizations. So we're kind of
Is the idea that one day this would be all over the U.S. or even globally, or is the idea to concentrate in very specific places that could most use this this resource and platform?
Great question. We're always expanding. So really the vision is for this to be a national thing.
I can just think even globally, like the implications could be profound. So that's very exciting to hear. So how long have you been building Purple Binder?
We've had a product on the market for about 2.5 years.
Wonderful. And so maybe talk a little bit about the unique partnerships you put together, how you got going, and what types of organizations or collaborations you've bridged or formed to get to where you are today.
I think that when we started 2.5 years ago, what we were doing was a really kind of radical idea. And I think that it's becoming a little bit less so, right? It's starting to become a little bit more mainstream in the healthcare community that the idea that patients have certain needs that can't necessarily be addressed within the traditional healthcare system, needs like food and housing. But when we started 2.5 years ago, that was a really kind of out there idea. So the first partnerships that we built were with organizations who were just really innovative and tended to have one or two really, really strong advocates in that organization who really believed in that proposition. And usually it was because they had had some kind of frontline experience themselves as a social worker in the emergency department, for instance, and they just saw firsthand how so much of people's health problems couldn't be addressed within the conventional medical system.
Mm. So how much does technology play into this? Maybe describe you said you had a computer science background. Is this a technology platform, or is it more of a social platform? Maybe give a little color on the technology aspects and how that plays into the growth or success of this resource.
Our platform is a technology platform, right? What it does is it allows care managers and end consumers to figure out what their needs are, first of all. So screening for what kinds of resources in a community you need. Second of all, to make referrals and to the resources that you're eligible for. And third of all, to follow up on those referrals to see whether or not the consumer has actually accessed the resource to which they were referred.
So have you had to think about technology in any different ways based on the regions that your platforms started, or is it all pretty much web-based? Have there been any unique sort of either design elements or technological sort of elements that you've had to adapt to or plan for based on your business?
Well, our app is accessed from a really wide variety of devices, and consumers tend to be accessing it more from mobile devices and phones. But I don't think that's true just if you're building for consumers in underserved markets. That's really true of any consumers these days, right?
It seems like maybe that's one of the misconceptions, is that underserved markets don't have access to a lot of the same technologies that everybody else does. Is that a misconception?
I think it is. There was a recent survey that was done in the Chicago public schools that showed that 90% of all the families had access to the internet through their phones. So it might be that not every single person has a smartphone, but definitely we're reaching a point where you can assume that someone in a family has a smartphone with access to the internet. And I think that one consideration that we had in our design was that you couldn't necessarily assume that people were always using the latest technology, right? So it might be an older smartphone. Or if they're accessing your platform through a desktop, it might have a really old web browser on it because it's at a public library. You also have to make sure that, you know, whatever instructions or language you use in your application are clear and simple and easy to read. But all those things are really true of most consumer technologies.
Right. This is good design, good technology exactly. build. Yeah.
With the exception of having to design for old web browsers. I really hope we can stop doing that soon.
Right. We should just turn a lot of those off, right?
Exactly.
So has anything surprised you? You're 2 years, 2.5 years in. What have you been surprised by in working in underserved communities and really serving underserved markets?
I think it's becoming less and less true by the day. When you think about communities that might be underserved or higher income versus lower income communities, where I think the digital divide still does exist, although it's growing smaller, is in terms of age groups. Hmm. I think older people are definitely less comfortable using technology than people who grew up with technology. And that's going to be a harder gap to cross, I think.
So if you could wave a magic wand and really see a number of things, one thing change, what would that be as you've been building Purple Binder?
I think the Affordable Care Act has done a fantastic job of getting all medical providers to work on the same page around the care of a patient, or at least in theory, thinking that they should. I think we have yet to see a comparable economic incentive emerge for social service agencies to take that more coordinated role in patient care. And I think that that's currently a missing piece.
Hmm. So one of the things we like to dig into are really sharing lessons learned. And we're hoping to inspire more entrepreneurs, more innovators, to focus on building solutions for underserved markets. What would your words of wisdom be to other, either computer scientists, other engineers, other entrepreneurs that may be thinking about building a solution for the underserved market? What would your advice be to them?
I think that one thing that you have to be careful of when building any kind of solution, if for an enterprise space where your end user is not necessarily the person who makes the buying decision, and especially in this space for reasons that I'll get into, is it can be easy to mistake a want for something that an organization will actually buy. And I suppose this is only really an issue if you're looking at a business is at a traditional vendor business model, right? If you're grant funded, then maybe this doesn't make as much of a difference. But one thing that we saw at the very beginning was we knew we had built a tool that was really, really useful, because at some point we opened it up for a free beta period, and within a very short amount of time with no marketing, we got almost a third of all of the case managers and social workers in the Chicago area to sign up for it. It was crazy. But then building a business model around that was way more complicated than we had expected.
So how did you solve that challenge, or how did you come about figuring out a business model to wrap around this solution that the market seemed to want?
Well, the business model that we've ended up with is really fairly traditional. I mean, it's a fairly traditional enterprise business model to healthcare, where you have a smaller number of customers and each customer pays a large amount of money.
And who's your customer?
Our customers are city governments, at-risk provider organizations, and managed care organizations.
And I know you talked about value proposition before, but what's your value proposition to those city managers when you're going in and selling them?
Well, city managers and local government are a different category, actually, than the healthcare organizations.
Okay.
With city managers, the value is that really that they are providing a service to their residents. When you get down to it, what drives a government's actions towards its constituents? It's that they want to provide good services and get reelected. So in setting up a purple binder in deployment is a way that they can provide a really public, really accessible service that helps a lot of people.
So looking out, predict the future for us. What's next for Purple Binder? What's next as more communities get access to this kind of resource? What does that mean in real practical terms for communities around the country?
Where I really see this going in the future is that social services are going to start to coordinate care much more closely with the existing healthcare system. Historically, those two systems have been really separate, right? You've had healthcare on one side and this fragmented system of community services on the other. But they really serve the same people and they have the same goals of helping to keep them healthy and improve their lives. So I think we're going to start to see closer coordination between those two previously separate sectors.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how optimistic are you about the future and about how we can solve some of these really big challenges and really big problems that are impacting people's lives in these communities?
That really depends when you ask me.
So today, for, you know, let's say in the next 3 years.
In the next 3 years, I think we're going to make huge, huge progress. One of the difficult things about this space is that some of the issues in it can be solved with technology, but there's also a policy element to a lot of them as well. So here we are, we're building products, we're working on technology, we're working on solutions, but in order to really see progress in providing better care to underserved communities, there have to be some policy changes as well. I think those policy changes are around how social services get funded and are compensated for some of the services that they provide. So I think those are coming. Whether they'll happen in the next 3 years, I don't know. In the next 3 years, I think we're going to see a lot of progress on the tech and solution side of things.
So any last wisdom to share with either other entrepreneurs or other people who care deeply about serving underserved markets?
Beware of the illusion of product market fit. Sometimes you've got the beginnings of it, you think you're all the way there, but you're wrong. And be nice to everybody, because you run into everybody again.
That's great, great advice. Well, thank you so much for doing what you do. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us and the Startup Help Now audience. It's great to have you here, and congrats on your success so far, and wish you a lot more.
Great, thank you so much.
Thank you. You can find more great interviews at startuphealth.com/now. See you soon.